The problem with what we're all doing here, both in this class and in this life, is that we're all trying to get something. And there's really nothing to be gotten. You know, we're trying to get passionate about, I really, really want to surrender. If I could only just, everything would be perfect. If so and so would look at me, life would be wonderful. $100,000 more, I'm fine. If I could just get rid of my thoughts, if I could sit 3 hours in meditation instead of one, I would get there. The interesting thing about spiritual practice and about life is that it poses the wrong question. You cannot solve it and you cannot arrive at the answer. There is nothing to be solved and there is no answer to be found. And the whole pursuit is our mind and body engaged in an impossible journey that is unbelievably entertaining. And every time we think we've got it, it disappears. The happily ever after idea, which is embedded in our consciousness, describes something that cannot be. Any two people who have found romantic love, when the prince and the princess, or the prince and Cinderella, finally find each other, we all know what happily ever after is. Everybody does. So what are we doing here? What are we doing in this pursuit of whatever you want to call this? Enlightenment, surrender, peace, relief. Part of the human experience is an extraordinary sense of tension. A tension that comes from desire and fear. And we all experience it and we all live with it every day. And everybody wants some relief from it. But only just so much. Because once we've cured the headache and once we've taken the Motrin or whatever it is that's relieved the thing of the moment, you go, oh, okay. And then we just seek out more tension. More situations that provoke tension. Because we are completely and absolutely caught by the world. Caught. We hunger for it. We love it so deeply until we don't. And there comes many periods where we don't. People we love are taken away from us and we hate the world. Jobs we were supposed to get don't materialize and we are angry. Things that were our due are not given us. We are misunderstood. betrayed, we have regrets. All of that stuff comes up and it becomes part of the stew of human experience. And so we come to this class, those who choose this particular form of Motrin. We come here and something happens in the class, which is when you sit still and when you commune with another human being, which is really all we're doing, there's an extraordinary kind of what I would call nutrient, a spiritual nutrient. It feels healthy, it feels good, it is very calming, it is very awakening in a way. It relieves stress and pain in the moment to some degree. But mostly, it makes you hungry for more. It makes you hungry for this very ephemeral thing, which is a kind of, if you will, release from or relief from the problems of your daily life. And so we come here hungry for another hit of that narcotic of spiritual meditation. And we usually walk away from it feeling, okay, I can get through the next 10 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours. You know, I got my fix of stillness and meditation. And so the next day comes and you want it again. Probably. If you have enough meditation and enough stillness, you get hungrier and hungrier for it because, among other things, the longer you live, the more tension life provokes. And the closer you get to the end of life, the more real questioning you begin to have about what this all is. And a kind of subliminal, or maybe not so subliminal, fear comes up that this is not going to last. That this thing that you have so totally invested everything in is temporal. And it's a kind of strange cognitive dissonance. Why am I devoting everything to something that's not going to last? And something in you knows that. Something in you feels that. And it is very, very discomforting. And yet, every time you come to this spiritual nutrient in your life, it's somehow all okay. It's okay that it doesn't last. It's okay that it doesn't have purpose in a way. It's okay that I'm going to die. Not really. But something in you goes, okay. The deeper experience of spiritual practice is the glimmer of something that exists beyond even the stillness of your own mind. The glimmer of something unspoken and almost unseen but present. And it is powerfully affirming. It doesn't speak in words we understand. It doesn't give us anything that we can take and hold and grasp and figure out. But we know it's there. And when you sit, you are in the presence of this unnameable and ineffable knowing. A kind of truth. And that knowing makes everything that's happening in your life right. It's right in ways you don't understand, but even your lack of understanding is right. It's right in ways we cannot assimilate, because often it feels so uncomfortable, so brutally off. And yet, when you sit in this meditative stillness, even the worst part of human experience is part of the amazing truth of life. And you watch all of your imperfection, and believe me, we all are imperfect. And no matter how much you grow spiritually, your imperfections will still be there. But they will be there with a kind of modifier, if you will, that acknowledges your imperfection is part of your perfection. If you develop enough hunger for this spiritual nutrient, and this is a, in a sense, dividing line in spiritual meditative groups, because there are a lot of people who simply get their analgesic, they get their thing that releases the pain, they get the thing that makes it okay to get through the next day, and that's enough. But for some people practicing sitting, something else emerges, and that is, that hunger is not enough. The hunger for the relief in the moment is not enough. Because you begin to sense in that rightness of your own unspeakable internal knowing something greater than you could ever imagine or express. Something that calls you with a power that is beyond anything that calls you in your daily life. And what happens when that starts to express itself is a bit threatening to your daily life, because suddenly your worldly achievement and your worldly goals are not what they were. They are not as important, and they may not be important at all. Suddenly, the thing that is calling you is so much greater than anything life can offer. Suddenly, you look at life and every entertainment form, every other human being, everything that you're looking at no longer provides for you this thing that they have provided before, which is the doorway to wondrous distraction. Suddenly, distraction is not desirable. And when that starts to take place, there is this drawing toward something that you've been feeling in the glimmer of your meditation, something that you've been tasting and smelling, something you know is there, and it is so unbelievably there's no word for it. There's literally no word for it. But it's all It is all that any of you, any part of you, wants. It's in a sense to acknowledge and witness and enter into yourself. Why is that desirable? I cannot tell you. Why would anybody want to wake up to themselves? Because it calls, because it speaks, because it's there. In the same way that Everest is there, yourself is there, and it is the thing you are hungering for more than anything. And all the little drops of nutrients that are provided for you in this class are just the doorway to, or the seduction toward, this true self that you are. Last week, before I taught class, I had an experience, and I hate to call it an experience because that limits it, but it was what felt like the opening to that self. And it was why we sit. And in having that or knowing it, there came up within me something that wanted it. And the very thing that wanted it prevented it from sitting, from remaining. The part of us that wants it, that wants to have it, to touch it, to own it, limits it and limits our availability to it. And so as that thing of wanting it arose, in a sense, it left. It doesn't really leave. But my wanting it brought me back into this, the world of distraction. Entering back into that distraction, the first thing I could feel is, no, I don't want to be back in that. This was so complete. And I felt so stupid coming back and so limited. And I understood for the first time how complete our willingness has to be to let go. How complete. And how on one level it's a muscle, on another level it's just a wish, and on some level it's a need. And throughout this last week, I've had this very dramatic experience of going back to that space and then back into this. And this has become ragged in its tensions. And the desire to escape back into the self has complicated that all by itself, just the desire. It's a very interesting time for me, but I'm... As I promised from day one when I introduced myself to any of you, I'm here to describe a journey and a process, not an attainment, not a truth. No, I don't project or try to project a truth. I'm telling you my experience. But I'll tell you the thing that's coming to me from my experience, wherever this leads, is that this awakening that one ultimately hungers for is a true space. It's a truth. And I first and finally understood that the true awakening is absolute, total, and inevitable. It truly will or does release you into who you are. I don't think meditating and sitting is a guaranteed pathway, but it does one very important thing. It announces your intention. It announces your cooperation with this vast, vast, unnameable, unspeakable truth that wants your awakening as much as you do, but it is a totally cooperative effort. You have to be part of it. And you have to be willing to let go of any need to own the world. Or be part of this world. Not that you won't be part of it, but you it will be of a very different nature. So, don't come here looking to get anything. Just come here to be, and you will have everything. It's odd that this wanting of something has value in that it is a muscle of reaching. It's not inappropriate, but ultimately it doesn't do it. In a way, nothing does it. In the deepest sense, the more you can arrive at nothing, no thing, no effort, nothing at all, that's really the place of arrival. When Rudy said surrender, he talked a lot about, it's not surrender this. It's surrender the whole. And you do not know what you're left holding on to until that moment of surrender arrives and you realize there's still this strand and there's still this hope and this belief and this little tiny thing, whatever it is, that's got you still held into the thrall of human experience. At some point, even that will go, and you will arrive at the one place you have always been and are, even as I'm speaking to you right now, and the unbelievable clarity and joy of that, based on my you can call it my moment in that space, is the fulfillment of this. But as long as you think everything in the world is important, this will prevent this from happening. That's not really true. Everything in the world is important, but it's only important to itself. And the only thing that's important in your relationship to it is to live it fully and truly and consciously. To be deeply, deeply true to your life. Because being true to your life is true to this energy force. It is true to God, if you will. It is true to existence. It's true to being. Be open and be available and be deeply engaged in the world and surrender at the same time. All of that lays the groundwork for your final, if you will, final may be the odd word, but for your awakening. So I speak all of this from a place in process. And I hope there's some nugget of value in what I'm saying. And I will continue to talk about it as it all goes on. But I really do believe that this awakening process is happening in the world, and that everybody sitting in this room, everybody, is on the doorstep of that experience or of that truth. Are there any questions?
Is the manner in which we choose to engage the world the distraction, an impact on the capacity to enter into that self? Is
you know, anything I can say will be wrong on some level. But intention has a lot to do with unfolding. And if your intent is to use your engagement with the world to better your position in the world, to make you more wealthy, to give you more involvement in the world, that intention will give you that, but that's not really what you're looking for. Not spiritually. Your intention to engage the world well is to be a conduit for this enormous flow between manifestation and the unmanifested, and to be present and to work it consciously. not to get something from it, but to do it brilliantly because you can. To bring the best of you to the moment because that's what you do. That's what it's about. It's to live brilliantly, to live beautifully, to live lovingly, to do all of that, not because if I love someone they will give me something in return, but because loving them is so wonderful. The wanting the return, when that's the intent, it co-opts and corrupts the experience. And that corruption prevents this from taking place. Because you're really digging a deeper ditch, saying, if I really do all this, I will get the money that will make me happy. Bullshit. That's not going to make you happy, because money never makes anybody happy. Truly. It's not, happiness is in the doing it fully, lovingly, completely, with every ounce of your capacity, using yourself well, because you have come into existence. You're part of this material world for a reason. And whatever that reason is, it is to be here completely and wonderfully. But not to get something in it that will make you, give you an advantage, or to make you better or lesser or any of that stuff. It's just live. And doing that serves and will allow, I think, the unfolding to take place in the most natural and wonderful way. I think what I am describing is not a special thing. I think it is completely natural and part of the human unfolding into truth and oneness. But our society is so distracted by endless, endless stuff that we are in a position where people have to come and sit like this to remember who they are. It shouldn't have to be that way, or maybe it should, because it is that way. But now that we're in this world of, you know, huge television screens with the kind of resolution that I watch baseball on television because I can't get over the colors. You know, they're just so brilliant and wonderful, and I don't even care about baseball. It's just the world is getting more and more enticing on so many levels, and if you don't find a way to be conscious of that, you get sucked in deeper and deeper and deeper, and in the end, you make it harder for yourself to have this natural unfolding that will free you from the unbelievably compelling nature of life. Does that make sense? Anybody else?
When your life seems to be going well and you're getting things that you want, how do you prepare for the eventual end of that?
I mean, it's a good point, and you put me down for that all the time because I am always telling you the other side of things, which I do, which is, you know, I know it looks negative. But it's an effort to be, it's to keep things in balance, to know, don't hold on to the greatness of this moment because it may make you happy in the future. Hold on to it in the moment because it's making you happy now. Period. The future will guaranteed do everything else. The roller coaster of life is unstoppable. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. Nobody just goes like up, 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 except maybe Steven Spielberg. And I question, you know, that one. But it really is this always, always. And when you go on that ride, if you're going to be miserable at the bottom and joyous at the top, and miserable at the bottom and joyous on the top, you're always going to be fighting to get to the other place, or to hold on to the place you're at. And that's complicating. What happens to people who, when they truly awaken, as I understand it and as I have begun to see it, is a kind of, the word is indifference. Not caring, but it's like, it's all wondrous. It's like, you know, it's all one. It's all truth. And the good and the bad is all of the same thing. And when you're not caught by it, you get to really see it. You get to really observe it in yourself and in everybody around you. And you have what becomes unbelievable compassion for human beings. Because you see how caught everybody is, and all you want to do is go, no, no. But you can't say that to everybody. But people who gather together to kind of hear that message, you can say it out loud, and a lot of people hear it. And then you begin to live this life of some detachment. Not disassociation, which is a real problem, you know, where you don't really acknowledge the truth of it. Detachment is to be in the truth and not caught by it. Just in kind of wonder or awe at it. Which is, I think, what really happens. It's like, I mean, the world is so magical, and literally magical, and